Hello.
Yeah, I need to speak to Cameron Maris of 19 Cent Feast, please.
That's not me anymore, necessarily.
Sorry, it's the wrong number?
No, this is Cameron. But you must have the old Facebook page. That's the Facebook page with only 53 likes. We moved on past that.
Oh, so this is Cameron, the guy who did my theme song.
Oh, yeah, this must be Trevor.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? Well, it's still us, but we're just no longer 19 Cent Feast.
Oh, I see. So it's still you. It's still Chris Buchheit. You're the same musicians that recorded my theme song. You just have a new band.
Yeah, that recording that you've been using is from 2009. I don't even know where you found that thing, but that thing is dusty and old, and it's time for it to go, I think. So,
I see. So you're hitting where I'm getting at, that the theme song sounds different this week, I noticed. So, yeah, now it makes sense.
Yeah, that's the old band, 19 Cent Feast. This is the new band, Middle Class Joe.
Yes, and hey, thanks for letting us use it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just say to anybody out there, if you like it, come check us out on Facebook. Like us, Middle Class Joe Music at Facebook.
And now I know, and knowing is half the battle.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, it's so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get to Texas.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for those of you who like to stay up after midnight. And folks, this is that podcast because we are those people. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo, and with me in studio, as always, is my formidable bro-host, co-host, vice-host. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Matt Foster.
Did you say bro-host?
You said it first. You put it in my head, and now it just pops in there.
I was being ironic. I hate you.
I know, and it's like a brain worm. It just gets in there, and it takes root, and it's any time I'm looking for a colloquialism other than co-host, that's what springs to the front of my mind. So I suffer, so must you.
This is the sound of me smashing my nose into the mic.
But Matt and I are film critics. You can find the podcast over at Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Nighthawks Pod. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can do us a huge favor by subscribing, giving us a rating, and leaving us a review. We're also over on Stitcher. So if that is your podcast aggregate of choice, we're over there too, so if you could subscribe and leave us a review over there, that would be fantastic. And we're on countless other podcast aggregates, so just look for us. You found us one way, maybe look for a few others, I don't know. But Matt, how are you holding up there?
Pretty good. I've had a day.
You've had a day, been a rough one. I've had a bit of a rough one. I had a bit of a rough one. Last week too, and I think you did as well. So we decided to treat ourselves and actually go out to a movie that is currently in theaters, and we figured since we did that, we'd bring that to you. Unfortunately, and this is just the way things shake out, we didn't have the best time at the movies.
I wouldn't say that. I had a good time at the movies. Like, the air conditioning was turned up really high. They layered my butter.
Do you have to request that, or do they do it automatically?
At this particular establishment, you do have to request it. Not only that, actually, I take it back. It was self-serve butter, and the kid filled my popcorn halfway up, made me go put butter on it, and then hand it back to get more popcorn on it.
So he allowed you to layer, that's good, but he made you do it yourself. How does that leave you?
I would say, on a scale of like rage scale, if I go from Dory and Finding Dory, like completely mellow, to like say Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, I would say it left me at like the kind of feeling you have when you walk out of a Greg Araki movie, you know? Just
well, anyways, folks, we are here to talk about Suicide Squad, the latest entry from the DC arm of Warner Brothers, bringing to life the DC comics of yesteryear, today, and beyond. DC has had kind of a troubled history up to this point with their comic franchises. They're a little all over the place. But the three major entries into their movie canon, which is separate from their television canon, which is separate from their other television canon, which is separate from their cartoon canon, which is separate from the direct-to-DVD cartoon films canon. The three big projects have been Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and now Suicide Squad.
As I like to call it, Beavis Dodge.
Which we did an episode on that you can go check out in our show history. But Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, were not well received. We gave a pretty tepid review to Batman vs. Superman ourselves. And people were kind of looking at Suicide Squad like the great hope. This is the movie that's going to turn around for DC and Warner Brothers. This is the movie that people are going to like. It's going to be a little more relatable, a little more universal. And it's going to bring fans to the property so that DC can have, and I'm just going to say it because it's what it is, DC can have this grand filmic empire like Marvel has. Unfortunately, it appears, according to ourselves and to several other critics, that Suicide Squad dropped the ball, fumbled it a little bit.
You know, apparently not according to the people that pay for things. It's on pace to be, a license to print money. But I was underwhelmed. I wasn't, demanding a refund, but it's got some flaws. I would say if I ranked Man of Steel, Beavis Dodge, and this, I would put them roughly Batman versus Superman third place. And I would say this is probably second, like, because I actually kind of liked Man of Steel, and I guess I'm not supposed to, but I didn't hate it.
You know what, Matt, I'm with you. I didn't mind Man of Steel. I think it was flawed, but it's still the better Superman incarnation that we've had on film, as far as I'm concerned. I was pretty tepid on Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice, and I'm pretty tepid on this, but in the grand scheme of things, it's tough to balance, because the problems I had with Batman vs. Superman and the problems I had with Suicide Squad are two different problems. And so if you complement that with the things that I liked, and then they basically are both tied for third with nobody in second. You know, they'll split the third place purse, and then second will just revert to the next contest. But yeah, I am not a fan of this. However, there is something I want to address right here at the top of the show, is that when advanced reviews of this film started coming out, For those of you who don't know, RottenTomatoes.com is a film critic aggregate site where they basically take a critic's review of a film. They'll determine whether or not that critique was meant to be negative or positive. Basically, they give the film a percentage rating based on the reviews from professional critics. And Suicide Squad was not doing well. I think it's still somewhere in the 27% range. And there was this huge fan blowback from people who seem to think that there is a grand conspiracy. Disney and Marvel are paying off critics to rate DC movies poorly. And it's this grand conspiracy, and it's led to death threats. It led to an online petition to get Rotten Tomatoes shut down. And this is all before the movie opens. So the people who are carrying out these petitions and things are people who have not seen the film. They are just incensed that this film that they're looking forward to is being reviewed that poorly. And this is a weird kind of childish reaction. And I think we're going to have an episode just talking about the fan culture of late. But this is something we're going to talk about because, like it or love it, it's not okay to threaten people with death, period. Full stop. It's just not.
Oh, so what you're saying is you're part of the Marvel conspiracy to silence people that are just asking questions?
Marvel was paying me off, I'd be living a hell of a lot better than I am now.
Put that shill dollar in the mail, Stan Lee.
things got toxic around this film really quickly. Because there was such a pushback from critics during advanced screenings, and then there is now the pushback against the critics, I'm starting to question the positive reviews that have come out from as you point out, people who went and purchased the tickets and saw the movie under regular release. There's not a doubt in my mind that there's not people out there who genuinely like this film. They like it for the right reasons. It is well justified in their mind. But I do think there's probably a lot of people who are just out there because they're afraid to admit that they were wrong when they signed a petition to get Rotten Tomatoes shut down because it gave a bad aggregate review made up of several reviews for a film they were looking forward to.
I will tell you, I got the jitters about halfway through the process of, you know, the development of Suicide Squad because initially I was kind of thinking the sort of people that made Deadpool were in charge here because the early test footage looked so visually accurate and seemed to properly carry the spirit of the thing. And then we ended up with what we got. It's again, we've talked on here before about how like the worst movie of all time is not going to make it to theaters. Like Suicide Squad's not the worst movie of all time. It's just one of those fives. I will say, as far as the fan backlash versus the critical backlash, Suicide Squad's in the position of having the kind of structural problem that bothers you more the more movies you watch. I don't think there's a right or wrong reason to like a movie, unless you like it because you believe you're supporting ISIS by watching it. That's the wrong reason. No, I think it's okay to like things, and yeah. a lot of stuff works here. But it has some stuff going on. I'm trying to phrase this in a way that doesn't sound movie snobby, because I don't mean it that way. I don't mean, oh, if you're educated about film, this will appear tedious to you. Like, I'm not trying to James Lipton everybody. What I'm trying to say is, literally, if you watch a lot of movies, you can get way out ahead of Suicide Squad. Like, it has kind of a telegraphed plot, and it has some real heavy exposition. And so, if you go to the new blockbuster when it comes out, and you watch it for stunts, action, maybe attractive people doing attractive things, you know, whatever, puts your butt in the movie theater seat, this kind of stuff is easy to give them. It can seem nitpicky to gripe about it, but then guys like us, it makes us mad because it's really so easy to fix. I call it MC Hammer syndrome because somebody involved in the making of this had no one in their entourage whose job was to tell them no. You know how Tracy Jordan had .com on 30 Rock? Like,
I don't know that it was so much that with Suicide Squad. And as the movie has been released, we've kind of started hearing stories about a troubled production. And, You know, there was even stories before it was released that after Marvel did so well with, like, Guardians of the Galaxy and then Batman versus Superman did so poorly, that there were some reshoots done to kind of spice up the script and punch up the laughs a little bit and make it not so dour and serious. So I think there was a lot of meddling involved here. I don't know how much of this was just the director sitting in his director's chair. Today I think I will have a flaming giraffe in the background. And nobody telling him no. I think David Ayer is a competent filmmaker. He's made good movies in the past. I really liked
Fury a lot.
Yeah, he also did End of Watch, which we both enjoyed. I had some directorial problems with that, but nothing on the scale of this.
I forgive End of Watch immediately for setting a driving montage to Harder Than You Think. Kanye hasn't come out with Harder Than You Think. He can't. Because somebody already dropped it.
So, I don't know. I don't know that this is necessarily one guy not being told no as much as it is. There was a lot of cooks in the kitchen and, none of them was really clear on what the end result was supposed to be. So instead of getting a nice souffle, we got vegetable soup.
Yeah, it was clearly some people that did not know if their homework assignment was to make Deadpool or Avengers 2. Like, it's super uneven and very fractured. You know, you have this Joker that could have been cool with a little more... Because, believe it or not, like, everybody's taking a dump on Jared Leto right now. Leto?
I don't think he cares.
Jared.
I've always said it, Jared Leto.
On old JL. But I got what he was going for. Like everybody, you know, a lot of people are like, I don't like his thug look. I think the Joker should be more of an East German aristocrat. Which, kind of... You know, no, the Joker is kind of a street level guy. He's not really, he was never supposed to be Frank Black, you know. Frank White, which one was King of New York and which one's in the Pixies? Let's get those two confused. But my point being, I got what they were going for, which is he is this very, almost living in a persona, kind of a Marilyn Manson. He's making commentary on the sort of street culture he's appropriating and just being kind of a genuinely weird dude. And he's also doing Heath Ledger Joker, but trying to put a little bit of a spin on it. And worthy attempt, I give it a C. And then you get into the issue of, like, there's just so much exposition here, and yet every... The movie starts with a good solid 20 of backstory.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's just run down a quick synopsis here. Suicide Squad is a movie about all of the DC villains. These are the comic book villains that have been... They've been locked up for various reasons. And a shadowy force in the government has decided to kind of assemble these select group of baddies into... It bears a comparison to the Dirty Dozen. They're going to form a group of bad guys that are superpowered or have abilities to pit against a bad guy somewhere down the road.
Gentlemen, ladies, what if Superman had decided to fly down, rip off the roof of the White House, grab the president right out of the Oval Office? Who would have stopped him?
I want to build a team of some very bad people who I think can do some good.
Y'all jokers must be crazy. I'm not just one of y'all.
This is the deal. You disobey me, you die. Try to escape, you die.
You got a boyfriend?
You irritate or vex me.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
You die.
If they get caught, we throw them under the bus.
What a ride!
So the planet is now aware that there are people like Superman and Zod out there. They can't defend themselves. The Justice League isn't around yet. This is a militant solution that they're going to take their prisoners of the war against crime and the war against supervillainy, get them into some kind of anti-hero team, and then basically bribe and cajole and coax them into completing a mission for them. And so what we have is this gallery who's who of bad guys from the DC universe, some more popular than others. I think the lion's share of them are Batman villains. They're pitted against this really stupid, shaky plot. I mean, I can't even go on with this, but basically this team is formed and they are asked to do battle with this crazy witch lady who is also somehow romantically tied to the guy who's handling the squad. And I mean, this is a mess. This movie is a mess, but
yeah, it's, Their primary adversary is one of them who defects, who just elects to pursue her own goals.
But is she defecting? The group wasn't really even together by the time. Anyways, the villain is a witch who possesses the body of an archaeologist. I guess sorceress is probably, I mean, that's the character's name, and that's probably a better description of what she is. And she's come back from this ancient sleep inside of a statue. And the whole goal is that people no longer worship these sorceress. So she's going to create a machine.
Her name is Enchantress.
I don't give a
pal. Pal. Buddy.
This movie is terrible. She's upset because people are worshiping machines now and not her. So she's going to use magic to create a machine to kill humanity.
Well, specifically to kill off the machines. I'm assuming she still wants some humanity left to make with the warship.
I don't know, because you know what? It was never... her end goal is not explored, like so many other things. But anyway, so yeah, that's your synopsis. I'm sorry, I got a little editorial in there, but oh God, this movie is bad.
It's not explored despite the fact that several other people get 5 and 10 minute flashbacks, including her. But the material of her motivation just isn't covered. It follows the archaeologist finding the statue that contains the spirit.
So anyway, I have a thesis, and I think without getting too spoilery... this is a good way to bring up the problems that I have with this movie. And it's a scene that is actually featured in the trailer, so I'm not even spoiling that much of it. And I'm calling this the How Do You Get a Harley Into an Elevator? Near the climax of the film, Harley Quinn, who is canonically in the comics, she actually started in the Batman animated series back in the 90s. She is a sidekick for the Joker and has... also developed into a romantic love interest for the Joker. The Joker, of course, being the quintessential Batman villain.
If you happen to live in a cave, the Harley Quinn is kind of a female in Motley, kind of a distaff, gender swapped Joker with a what would you call that? Like a Long Island, Brooklyn? What accent is that?
She definitely has an East Coast accent, you know, somewhere. I don't have an ear for the East Coast patois, but she's somewhere northeastern.
The Janine from Ghostbusters accent. And she's a fairly beloved character because of how they've walked her plot around in the animated series in the comics, where she has quite a lot of very compelling B and A minus arcs with Poison Ivy and Catwoman and stuff, and they have done some really interesting things with her in the comics. The problem with this movie is all they are doing is cashing that in. The aspects of Harley Quinn that are pulled into Suicide Squad are the weakest and unnoticed ones. And here is the thing that gets me is, like, I hate it when people run their finger across the brass ring but don't grab it. I'd rather have a bomb than a fizzle. So much was done right here. Like the look and feel is very good. The characters look like they look in the comics. They're well realized, but she just doesn't have the depth. She's a person, she's a doctor who was treating the Joker when he was locked up, and she gets, what would you call that, like reverse Stockholm syndrome. They get kind of a Bonnie and Clyde thing going.
Yeah, instead of curing him, he made her go insane and kind of gaslighted her, and actually did, in the narrative of the film, does some actual physical harm to Harley. He actually sends her under involuntary shock treatment to kind of get a few wires crossed upstairs. So she's this beloved character. She's very popular. And there's a scene towards the end of the film, building right into the climax, where they're in a skyscraper, and it's the whole Suicide Squad. The team is there. They have united and galvanized and decide they are going to take down the sorceress. And so that they're kind of girding themselves and dusting themselves off of their previous battles. And everybody's like, it kind of turns and it's like, okay, well, where do we go now? And they look up and Harley Quinn is already in an elevator and she's kind of pleasantly waving. And it's this big glass. This is important. This is a glass elevator. And she's already on her way up to the floor where they are going to take their next step in taking down the sorceress. So she's in the elevator. And then suddenly, when we cut to the inside of the elevator, she is in there with one of the evil hench goons, and they do battle, and then she fights another one, and by the time the elevator arrives at its desired floor, the doors open up, she is dispatched with two baddies. Keeping in mind this was a glass elevator, we saw it from the outside, and there was nobody in there. And now she's defeated two creatures who, I think one of them actually does enter into the elevator at one point, but the other one was just kind of there. And then when the door opens on the other side, on this presumably high up floor, a floor high up enough that she would have time to dispatch two people in the meantime. And once she arrives there, on the other side of the door is the Suicide Squad waiting for her. Where did the hench person come from? How the hell did the Suicide Squad get to the floor before she did, when she clearly left beforehand? These are the problems that I have with this movie. It's not that it came from a place of insincerity. It's not that the performances were bad. A movie on this scale, with this budget, with this much talent behind it, has no business making production errors that bad. This is a major plot hole. This could have been fixed with another pair of eyes on the script.
When you start going over it on that level, then you start with, why was there a guy in the Suicide Squad whose superpower was climbing anything?
Right.
the guy they just took out as an example to prove that their exploding restraint system worked.
Yes.
That guy's power was climbing anything. And we have, on the uneven tonality, we have is he Captain Boomerang?
Yeah.
He's Captain Boomerang, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't want to fall into the trap of going, Mr. Boomerang, sorceress, I don't care if she's a sorceress. Like, I just don't want to do that. Not because I deeply respect the film, but just because it gives re-critics so much ammo. Like, well, you didn't watch it then, if you don't even know her name. I care.
And that's the point, though, is that I don't actually care enough about these characters to learn their names. I don't. The movie should be able to make me care about these characters enough that I learn their names. In Stranger Things, I knew the names of the characters by the second episode because I gave a shit. I wanted to know who these people were. I wanted to know more about them. In this movie, call her whatever the hell you want. She's not a credible threat. She's not interesting. And so, it's not coming from a cavalier attitude. It's coming from the fact that, A, I don't care about the characters, and that is a fault of the film. And B, it's not made abundantly clear what that guy's name was who could climb anything that was redshirted, 20 minutes into the squad hitting the ground. I don't even think it was 20 minutes. I think it was like he got off the plane.
There's a lot of stuff here like the Captain Boomerang having a weird unrealized unicorn fetish. It's a funny running joke, but the shoe never drops.
Right.
Like there's no... They never close that loop, and so it's just weird to be weird. And that, to me, that smacks of, this was gonna be rated R, whatever the denouement of that joke is, they had to cut it. Because this isn't a certain other movie that involved where they could show someone cooking the chimichanga, so to speak. We have other stuff going on, like Killer Croc, who's here, who's an interesting character in, again, you know what this reminded me of? Blade 2. A lot of interesting people, and it's just so overstuffed with them, they don't all get to do anything.
See, and I've never been a huge Killer Croc fan. You know, I always thought he was kind of a big, dumb brute of a character. And his most interesting character, or his most interesting stories have always been stories where he's acting out of character. But, I mean, the poor guy, they don't give him anything to do in this movie until they literally just give him something to do. And it's this weird kind of tacked on. It's like, oh, suddenly there's a secret entrance into the thing, and it's underwater. If only we had a guy who could go underwater. Oh, wait, we have a half crocodile man.
What's funny is there's a bunch of Navy SEALs there with scuba gear, and they don't want to take him.
Yeah.
Because he's and he completely validates that by the way he acts in the next 30 seconds. Like you're like, oh, Flag should have just left him because he was awful the whole time. Yeah. He was actively counterproductive to bring. And then we do have interesting people. We have Will Smith as Deadshot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had the interesting heavy Diablo, who is a Latino pyrokinetic who has essentially embraced pacifism because of the sheer dangerousness of his powers. And the two of them have good arcs. They have good storylines, and because of the clutteredness, we don't really get to see them do what we need to see them do. Although I have to say, I liked Will Smith almost pushed it into Denzel territory with letting a little more anger out. And then the scene where we finally, when we see Deadshot going full out, and because he stops like a whole wave of oncoming opposition, and you're like, wow, that guy is, that's definitely, and I liked it because, you know, Deadshot is a guy who has a subtle superpower. You know, he's very good at shooting things dead, and they really highlighted how just tide turning that could be. That was a neat moment. It was, and these are the kind of sequences that if you go, like I said, if you go into it with a kind-hearted take on it and you want to see something that looks like the comics you read, sequences like that can make it for you. The other thing is the Enchantress's sort of brother, I think there's some kind of Egyptian thing. They're like kind of pharaoh incestuous partners. They're She calls him brother, but they're also a little squicky. He is this big CGI thing when he's fully out of the bottle. And he's not really, he's kind of reminiscent of the big generic baddie at the end of Thor, the big world smacking robot. And he's just not that cool. The coolest thing he does is early on, there's some like body horror with him when he goes after some stuff, and he gets a hold of some people in a subway, and the sort of damage he wreaks on the environment is very cool looking. Like, he makes for a good set piece, but I'll tell you what it is now that I think about it. It had a very video game feel. Like there's a cutscene, then an action piece, then a special mini game for your guy that swims, then a special mini game for your guy that shoots. He has a shooting level. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And I don't. We wrestled with how to get into this because I had a real problem here, and this is my elevator thing. Well, then feel free to shoot me down. I don't understand the differential power level on these super teams. I gotta say, Jeremy Renner did the best possible job redeeming Hawkeye, and we've seen some neat stuff with Black Widow. But really, really, they're out there with the vision, the guy that can just reach in and give you the old high school flick right in the kidneys. You're not supposed to pick a side in public. We're not supposed to endorse a candidate. But Superman has laser eyes. He can just cook Batman. Do you have any bat asbestos? Because he's just going to shoot your junk off with his laser eyes.
Oh, but if Batman has time to prepare, he has a kryptonite ring.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's coming from a Batman fan. I am a Superman and a Batman fan, and god damn, that argument is stupid.
Well, I just think, like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, you know, maybe. And maybe there is a point there about the hubris or what have you, but Superman also seems to be a super learner with a pretty agile mind. Some depictions of Superman depict him as having technical and observational skills on par with Batman. I realize he's Superman and he has very little to fear from bank robbers, but he does keep running into Kryptonians and Doomsdays, who may or may not be Kryptonian, depending on whose movie you watched. I refuse to believe that he's never taken a karate lesson in his life, and just having a kryptonite ring would just, you know. Doesn't Superman get any time to prepare? That's all I'm saying.
Superman never made any money, saving the world from Solomon Grundy. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him.
So I don't want to beat up this movie for the full hour. So I'm going to run down kind of the elevator moment. That wasn't a major sticking point with me, but it is a good example of other stuff in this movie that just does not make sense or was poorly executed. Like, the timeline is jumpy. I have no sense of time in this film. I think at one point the handler, his name is Flag, and he's kind of this military, no-nonsense guy whose job it is to keep the Suicide Squad in order. And if they get out of order, then they are going to be... They have explosive collars, but implants that they're wearing on their neck that Flag has the power to set off and murder these people. He says at one point, like, okay, so this has been going on for 3 days. Which was news to me. The progress of time as shown in the film felt like hours. It's like, oh, there's this major event downtown. There's some magic going on, and there's some destruction, and lots of people are dying. And so we're going to mobilize the Suicide Squad, and they're out the door by 0900. But he says it's been 3 days. And I mean, there's no sense of time there. There's the only way you know that 3 days has passed is because he says so. And that's a poor way of doing that. Another thing, everybody in this movie gets a cool intro and a theme song, and it's everybody except for this poor bastard. I don't even know his name. Is it Slipknot? Is that who that was supposed to be?
I think that is his name, yes.
Okay. Yeah, he gets Star Trek redshirted, like, immediately. And he was the only one not to get this cool intro, so you saw it coming a mile away. And you're kind of left at the end going, like, wait a minute, who was that? Everybody else got a cool intro. Did I miss his intro?
Well, yeah, and then we also have... The other thing is we have the character Katana. I'm not real familiar with Katana from the comics, but in this she's presented very conflicted anti-hero with a katana. She's Japanese. She's angry with the mobsters that killed her husband. Pretty standard revenge fair kind of thing. Her sort of shtick is that her katana is magic and can cut through, you know, it's a +5 soul-stealing sword. They repeat her minimal backstory incessantly. Yeah, the one thing they were concerned about making sure you knew was that they had a magic sword to take out the magic threat. And they beat that to the point where I would go so far as to call it 5-shadowing. Like, it's like, gee, I wonder what's going to end up stuck through Enchantress by the end of the movie, you know?
So, yeah, and we also have Harley Quinn, who, as you pointed out, is just like a regular person on a squad with everybody else who has these superpowers, and we're not really sure why she's there. I mean, I know why she's there. She's there because she's a huge property for Warner Brothers, and she's a box office draw. Because Margot Robbie looks good and is a good actress and will deliver a solid performance. There is no reason...
The character's very beloved, but the other thing is, on the team, it's not just dumb that there's a human on the team. On the team, any value she adds is completely redundant. There's no reason to take her because she does nothing Katana doesn't do. She does nothing Boomerang doesn't do. They already have a gadgeteer and a scrappy mundane. They don't. She's just there because there's one more seat in the bus. And I suppose a fan would characterize it the other way, that the other two are the extra ones and that they should, if they cut something, it should have been whatever. Same argument goes the other way. Fair enough. There were too many of them in the movie.
I mean, the argument can be made that, yeah, she's expendable, but so is anybody else in correctional system of the DC universe.
Well, and what's sort of interesting about that is the Suicide Squad is, it's an older property than most people think, and it is very much based on like the Dirty Dozen. It has it's I think 59 was when it came out, so it's rooted in late World War II comics, like your original Captain America and stuff. So the idea of a Suicide Squad, their expendability being a high priority, is kind of cool, but it's negated by the fact that the context here is they're deployed domestically. Like, they're right in the middle of a town, a big city, actually. And the mission they're on doesn't really make a lot of sense. It really seems like they would kind of just nuke the place from orbit, because it's the only way to be sure. I can dredge up things to praise here. Like, I thought the rank-and-file baddies were creepy, and I thought the things the main heavy guy does, who literally I don't think they actually say his name. If they do, Enchantress says it to him in a heavily accented, heavily pitch shifted voice, and he speaks back same. He's this kind of pivotal character that's just not well introduced at all. But what he does is creepy. Like, when he attacks, the action is real well realized. Like, that part's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Hernandez is really cool as Diablo.
Like, well, see, that's the thing. His character is cool in that he's a pacifist for most of the movie. And it kind of takes some poking and prodding and galvanization of a questionable nature from his teammates to kind of get him in full combat mode. But what it doesn't explain is what the hell he was doing the entire movie before that point. He just kind of conveniently disappears from the action as the Suicide Squad is facing down with some henchmen, and he's just kind of, we're left to assume, just kind of on the sidelines watching. I don't know why he isn't being attacked or how he defends himself, but...
He, Killer Croc, and Captain Boomerang do make several kind of... Like, the thing that gets Slipknot killed is Boomerang wants to just walk off, and so he sort of tricks him into testing the anti-escape system for him. And so, like the three of them are the most reluctant members and do try to kind of... They are monitoring for a moment when they can slip away, but it just sort of never comes. And it's just...
Well, and even on top of that, Diablo wants to be locked up. He is happy. He's not happy, but he is where he wants to be, is locked up away from people where he can't do harm. And so he's actually reluctant to go out in the first place. And then he's reluctant to use his powers. He doesn't turn his powers on until Will Smith coaxes it out of him. It's in the trailer. I don't think that's a spoiler. And then he starts using his powers, but we have no idea what he was up to any of the other times when there was a big action beat. I mean, Killer Croc kills some people, just if only in the interest of self-preservation. We don't get to... And that's what I'm talking about. It's not that there's a logical reason for this. There isn't. It's just an oversight. It's a poorly made film. Now, maybe there is a cut of this film that exists where that shit is explained.
It's just so overstuffed that not enough actually happens with each person. And at the end of it, Enchantress tries to tempt them by offering them their heart's desire, which we're treated to a flashback of.
Oh my God. And that just brought the whole movie to a screeching halt.
because they do 8 of them. So like they do, I know, was it literally 8, but they do several in a row.
No, it wasn't all 8, like, but it was a lot of them. And notice this entire time, except for the beginning when we're talking about the characterization, we haven't brought up the Joker. Because you want to talk about things that bring this film to a screeching halt. It's this B story that they've got going on between Harley and Joker, where Joker is on the outside. He has not been captured. Harley is on the inside and has been co-opted into the Suicide Squad. And so Joker finds out about this, and he is going to bust Harley out. And so there's this weird B story about him failing to do that that has no consequences for the rest of the film. It is literally just, it is tacked on. And it is tacked on because, I think, this is my subjective summation here, they felt they had to justify Harley Quinn's existence, keeping in mind, most bankable character in the film, by showing that she was Joker's girlfriend. That's the only reason I can think of that any of that is in there. And it could have been taken care of in one of her 3 or 4 flashbacks that we got.
In the mind of the mechanical spider guy.
John Peters. Giant Spider in the third act Peters.
That's an elaborate reference, but Kevin Smith fans will get it. But he did 2 things. He thinned out the Navy SEALs, and he just threw he's just a monkey wrench. He's there because otherwise they're going to accomplish their goal too quickly and smoothly because there's too many of them and they're too competent. So he's literally there just because they realized they wrote themselves into a corner and they didn't have the balls to just make a Mad Love movie later, which is...
People are like, oh man, I actually didn't mind Jared Leto's Joker. I could use more of him. And I'm like, no, that movie needed less Joker. And it's not because I didn't like Jared Leto as Joker. I wasn't blown away by him. I wasn't incensed by him. He was just kind of there. And he suffers from the thing that everybody else in this movie is suffering from, except for like maybe 3 characters, which is that they give them nothing to do. I mean, Joker is there as a cool set piece, but he's really given nothing to do. Harley is there as a cool set piece, but her arc is... there isn't one.
Well, and the other thing, if I can traipse on the border of Spoiler County...
Okay.
The most interesting moments in the movie come when, like, first off, it appears at one point the Joker has died, and Harley Quinn does go through a palpable, a visible on-screen mental transition. Like she's sort of, a cloud is lifted up, and she processes it very quickly, like sort of almost like she was ready to go with it, you know, like not quite a good riddance, but an interesting thing happens when she loses the Joker and then processes it. And then at the end, the epilogue, when she was relatively comfortable in the facility, and then he complicates it again. And you see this kind of look go across her face, like, oh, I got to get back into my Harley character.
Yeah, but she's happy about it. She's not taken out of the asylum kicking and screaming. She's happy to see the guy. And I think that's why I was disappointed, is we didn't get that tortured Harley and Joker. I mean, there's a lot of conversation going on online now about people who are idolizing the romance between Harley Quinn and Joker and how that's a bad thing because it's an abusive relationship. And those people are right. And unfortunately, that's not really explored here. I guess maybe implied. It depends on where they're going with it. It certainly isn't fully realized here. It's not realized enough to invoke the Joker as a character, as a player in the Suicide Squad film.
It's just so weird that the movie happens in a vacuum, because the threat they're called on to deal with is one of their own flaking off. And then the thing that complicates that is one of their own flaking off. And then the threat that makes that complicated is the idea that at any given time, some or all of them might just flake. And that's a fine central theme for a movie about a gang of misfits. And the particularly Deadshot is actually well handled. And by the end of it, you see that he has turned a corner and is trying to, and is the character is going somewhere, that he's got a foot on the road to redemption. That was brought off, but the rest of them, they just hammer on it so much into such cross purposes that it's just not all that effective. And I really wanted to give this one a pass, and it's just got some clunk to it. But like, I'll repeat my caveat. They aren't things that aren't going to bother people that aren't that out to be bothered. I do know a lot of people that just found the net effect to be kind of not engaging. Like, they were just going, it was a little draggy. And that's kind of a shame, because this is a cool property. It's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but think that it suffered from the same kind of need to set up Justice League and make sure Flash and Batman both did a walkthrough and some of that stuff that burdened Batman versus Superman. It didn't. And you'll notice, if you want to get into the topic of what Marvel does that DC doesn't, is like, a Hulk movie is a Hulk movie. An Iron Man movie is an Iron Man movie. A Thor movie is a Thor movie. And if they have walkthroughs and cameos and post-credit things, they're real quick beats. They're winking and nod.
Get to Civil War. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, but Civil War is the end game, though. I mean, well, I guess there's going to be an Avengers 3 or something now. But Marvel is bringing the stuff off with a lot more deftness. And it's because deftness, not tone deafness, deft with a T. But lion face, lemon face. I think the crucial difference is a little more creator trust, and or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the problem is too much trust in Zack Snyder. But I think David Ayer left alone makes a better movie than this. And some of the accounts we've heard suggest that they brought in a guy to re-edit it at the last minute. That there was a borderline Alan Smithy situation here, but you don't Alan Smithy yourself on a movie this big.
Right.
So I don't know. I think at the end of the day, everyone played ball, but it seemed like it was a rather fraught production. My understanding was that Jared Leto got into a real method rut and was kind of a jerk on set.
Yeah.
Which again, I don't know if he was a method actor for that whole shoot, for the number of scenes that made it into the movie. That is almost criminal. Like, that's like, you should let a key grip beat him up. maybe because that key grip just wants to destroy something beautiful.
I do want to run down a few things that I liked, so I'm not totally negative on this movie, because I'm not. It's not the worst movie ever made. It's not even the worst movie this year, but it is a movie that I am pretty handily not recommending to anyone. But that being said, there is some good in here. I think the effect to which the music was used can be argued, but I think the selection of actual songs was pretty good. It was kind of a bebop in time. However, Buyer Beware on the album, there's some on the soundtrack album. The movie is positive. Did you do that
kids bop?
Yeah, it's a lot of covers and remixes that aren't necessarily... I mean, you get a cool clip in the movie, but the whole song isn't necessarily up to snuff. The movie is positive for David Harbour, who is not in the movie a ton, and you know he would have been the star of the movie if Stranger Things had come out last year. But it was good to see him in this.
Hashtag David Harbour for Mike Hammer.
Also, great performances from Viola Davis. She does a good job. Margot Robbie does a good job. Will Smith does a good job. They do the sincerest best with what they're given. Unfortunately, they're just not given a lot. But they chew through this script professionally. And I do want to say there's a lot of people out there who are credit. I want to be careful with how I put this. They're crediting a point in the plus column for the movie because they think Margot Robbie looks good. And yes, Margot Robbie looks very good. That does not make this a good movie. You can see Margot Robbie playing Margot Robbie looking good for the sake of Margot Robbie looking good in The Big Short. You can see her looking good and delivering a hell of a performance in The Wolf of Wall Street. She has packed a lot of work into the span of 6 or 7 years. So if you're just out to go get your salivary glands pumping over Margot Robbie, there are alternatives. But
Actually, a good supercut would be Suicide Squad, but whenever Joker's on screen, someone edits in Jordan Belfort from Wolf of Wall Street. Or just the brain from Animaniacs.
There you go. You
know? Just, yeah.
But, unfortunately, because they're not given a hell of a lot to work with, Margot Robbie fails to carry this film to the finish line, and that's especially based on her looks, because that's a really shallow, kind of shit thing to base whether or not you like a movie on. I did like Jai Courtney, who I traditionally don't have any real strong feelings one way or the other, but it is nice to see him doing something that isn't like a death rattle for an action franchise. I mean, that poor guy was in A Good Day to Die Hard. He was in Terminator Genesis, and he's also in that Divergent series that they just keep making movies for whatever reason.
Hey, those make money.
I guess.
They're not the death rattle. They're not for you, but the people they're for seem to like them.
Okay, I'll take that. But I think the beer-swilling soccer hooligan kind of Captain Boomerang type, I think it works well for him. I want to see him do more of this and less pointless sequels like Good Day to Die Hard, Terminator Genesis, and Insurgent.
I will say it is remarkable that by the end of the movie, you are actually kind of rooting for Captain Boomerang in some odd way. And you're amazed at the limited utility that he gets out of boomerangs, manages to actually matter at a few points. This is the best cinematic Captain Boomerang to date.
And we did speak a little on Jay Hernandez, who plays Diablo. They did, I think, some actually cool stuff with Diablo. I liked his motivation. I liked his conflict. I liked his performance. But there was too many unanswered questions just in the continuity of the story or in the continuity of the film. It's just like, well, what was he doing while they were doing the? Well, okay, I guess he was just off screen doing nothing.
Well, and again, it's clunky correction of clunky problems, because you know what you said, they could have fixed it if someone took a second look at the script. The problem is it was actually a third look. They had a script. A guy took a second look at it, made it worse, and the guy that looked at it third had to do what he could.
Well, and you know, and that's...
And so they doubled down on him being a pacifist because he's, again, he's too powerful for the... Like we all kind of know right away that it's going to come down to Enchantress. Incubus is the name of the male Enchantress character, the counterpart. It's going to be Enchantress, Incubus, Diablo, and Deadshot. It's pretty obvious that one of the mundanes, one of the muggles, is going to tip the scales just when things seem darkest.
And I wonder which one that could be.
Well, not the one it should have been, because it's got to be the one that it is. So,
but I think we have a lot of great performances here that were just hampered by a bad execution. And it may not even have been a bad execution at the production level as much as the post-production level. And like I said, there may be another cut of this film out there somewhere where all of this makes sense, the story's handled better, and the performances are given their due. But unfortunately, the cut that is in theaters is not that film.
And I will say again, in the reluctant credit where credit is due column, like, and it's an important tick box for a comic book movie. This is what I thought about the Ben Affleck Batman too. These depictions of these characters are very loyal. They are good 3D executions of the four color characters. Deadshot looks like Deadshot. Harley looks like Harley. And they also look like they're in the real world and not ridiculous. That's something that I really appreciated about Captain America, the first Avenger. That's something I really liked about the first X-Men movie when it came out. You know, so there's a lot of good work done here in design, in look and feel. The people that are liking that, that seems to be a value of prominence for them, is they got to look at people who look how they've always imagined the character. And that's a big deal to a lot of fandom. That's a thing they want, and they want to feel respected when they go to the theater. They don't want a UV bowl, we just bought the license situation. I think they're getting that out of this, which is why they're going to see it, and apparently going twice.
Well, and you know, it's important to note there has been a regime change over at DC Warner Brothers, a post Batman versus Superman, and the effects of that change really came very, very late in the production of this film, and to what degree this film was altered because of that is unknown, but it's enough, the news is enough that I'm willing to give DC one more chance, but right now, they're not Marvel, that's for damn sure. I'm not as excited for what is the next film, Wonder Woman. You know, we saw the Wonder Woman trailer. Wonder Woman was one of the more likable parts of Batman vs. Superman. But because DC is having so many problems, I'm looking at that trailer going, you know what? Suicide Squad had three really good trailers that got me really excited, and I was really disappointed when I walked out of the theater. I don't want that with Wonder Woman.
I really like the vintage look and feel, like the Rocketeer, Indiana Jones, like the time and place that's hinted at in the Wonder Woman trailer. I'm a little lost as to the Ezra Miller Flash. Is he Wally West? Which one is he? I don't know. But the sort of more he has the crackling speed force, and he's kind of a young Spider-Man type character with a mouth on him. I so far I've really liked that Flash, and I'm pretty pumped for Jason Momoa.
Aquaman.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a Khal Drogo. Aquaman pun, but I couldn't off the cuff. Let me write 10 of those and come back to the next pitch meeting. I'm not out of hope for the DC continuum, and
I almost am, I think. And I'm and it's to the point where I'm a little lukewarm on some of Marvel's stuff because it's just I've seen a ton of it, and you need to do something new and something fresh. I think that's where Marvel is succeeding on Netflix, in that expanding their cinematic universe to the world of television, and they've taken kind of a darker, more investigative tone on that side of things with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and then we've got Luke Cage coming up at the end of next month. But, you know, I watch Ant-Man, and I watch The Avengers 2, and they were... Ant-Man was okay. I had a good time. I was pleased with my purchase, but I'm not real champing at the bit to go see it again. Civil War I enjoyed, but it makes no sense as a standalone movie. At that point, you either have to have bought in and be familiar with everybody up to that point and what's going on, or you're not going to take anything away from that film. And so it's entering the point where Marvel's kind of like, okay, you're either with us or you're not. And everything from this point forward is going to be this niche thing. And I'm kind of getting burnt out. I'm like, I don't need another origin story. I don't want to be introduced to another hero. And I think I'm kind of that way with DC, too. Is like, not only am I not interested in superhero stories anymore, and that's not entirely true, but I'm just saying, but if it takes something special, let me put it this way. DC has failed to cut through the fatigue and show me something interesting. They've tried, and everything up until this point has kind of fallen short of keeping me interested. Man of Steel was okay, but it it wasn't as good as anything that Marvel's put out in the last few years. So,
well,
so I don't know.
Deadpool was the last one I really liked. Like, there's nothing to complain about in Civil War. Like, it's pretty solid. But again, it's getting to the point where, man, it might be time to rest him for a summer. You know?
Yeah.
let the poor guys take a walk.
And I'm not ready. Oh. I mean, and you have to look at it. You know, this has been the culmination of years of world building. Yeah, you take a look at Iron Man, came out in 2008, and what we've almost had a decade of world building culminating to what they were just able to pull off in the Avengers and the Avengers 2 and Civil War, to varying degrees of success, I might add. And DC is trying to jump into the pot at the deep end and then, you know, kind of branch out into the shallower ends. And that's not enough of a departure for me to care. It's not interesting enough for me to think that this is worth investing another decade into a different property to watch the same types of stories being told a different way. It's just, it's not interesting me. I hope I'm wrong by this time next year. I hope I'm going to hop on the mic and say, you know what, guys, what I told you in that episode when we were talking about this, I was wrong. I want to be that guy. But man, I'm feeling the superhero fatigue. And if I'm feeling it from Marvel, who I've been pretty behind for a while, DC, man, Wonder Woman's going to have to be pretty damn incredible. And I said that about Suicide Squad as well. So I'm starting to get real trepidatious.
I think I'm feeling superhero fatigue right now. Because we're old.
Well, on that positive, sunshiny note, I think...
Get off my lawn!
I think that's going to bring us to a close here. Matt, any last thoughts?
Matt Locke! special additional trailer shout-out. Watch the Luke Cage trailer.
Yeah!
It's good.
Maybe we'll do that one next week. Maybe we'll bring in Luke Cage for some action there. But... have a good night. Be good to yourselves. Be kind to yourselves. And we'll see you back here another time. We're gonna wrap up because it's almost morning.